This is the Third Degree, Environment and Social Justice Conversations and Current Affairs. I'm Jessica Minchell. Today we're delving into the complex issue of incarceration in our criminal justice system. We'll be looking at the living and working conditions for inmates, why it's so extraordinary that the community in Grafton blockaded the jail to keep the prisoners in and the jail open, and it's a year on from the mass hunger strikes at Pelican Bay Prison in California. Later, we'll also hear about what's happening in the UK by looking at the national magazine that goes out to all prisoners. Firstly, I speak with Brett Collins, coordinator of Justice Action Community Organisation, which campaigns on prisoners' rights and broader justice issues. I thought a good place to start would be with an overview of how governments and the legal system in Australia view the role of prisons within our society.
I mean, you have to say, first of all, that some prisons are really a place for the excluded. They're the people who are excluded in the general community, I suppose, people who are the minorities. And we're talking then in terms of Aboriginal people. We're talking about people with mental illness. We're talking about refugees. We're talking about people who don't really fit into the normal industrial community, who don't pay the same taxes as others, who don't have the same leverage, who quite often have some measure of social vulnerability.
What's wrong with all of the rhetoric around prisons that, despite the legal system saying it should be rehabilitative, it's actually seen more as punitive and is meant to act as an example that will deter others in society from behaving in the same way?
Look, you'd have to say that it's not even punitive, to be honest. I mean, when you have people who end up living inside the prisons over decades, who actually become so institutionalised that when they are told they have to leave, they don't want to leave anymore. They're actually so excluded from the general community. They have no family anymore. Their children have moved on. Their wives have divorced them. They're actually only able to cope inside the institutions. Then you have to say it doesn't even form as a place of punishment. It is a separate entity, warehousing of community problems, and of course increasing all the time. So whereas at one stage we had we got 14 times the rate of Aboriginal people inside prisons as the European people, now we have for children we have something like 50% of kids, right, are Aboriginal kids inside youth justice institutions. So you have a worsening of the situation. People who come in as a kid almost certainly go into the prison system afterwards.
Do you think the system also promotes the idea that criminals are aberrant in society rather than a product of this society?
Look, that's clearly ridiculous. I mean, what you have, in fact, if you go into prisons, you see the people there are actually just the same as you and I, really. They, for a whole range of different reasons, are in there. Quite often they have a drug problem of some sort, or they've misbehaved, and then they get caught up in the system. I mean, it really comes down to, I think it's something like 0.05% of crimes that are committed in the general community actually end up with the perpetrator actually sitting inside the jail. Most people get away from the consequences of the actions. It is not much relevance between the person who's in jail and the crime in the general community.
So do you see that there is this disjunct between how we should be thinking about prisons and how they're promoted within society?
Look, there's no question that there's room for a change. There's room to look at it in a different way entirely. The reality is that there are some issues in the community, serious issues, ones that need to be dealt with, ones that involved significant discrimination, where people can't get jobs, when people don't have an opportunity when they come out from school to have had the education, the encouragement, the support for them to survive. And so when they come out, then they've got few options. They, in fact, even expect to go to prison. And for some people, that is like a rite of passage. For Aboriginal kids, they all know somebody who's either in jail or whose parents are in jail. And that's a tragedy. That says a lot about, racism in our community. And the amazing thing also is that the amount of money that's spent for, say, young kids, there's over $200,000 a year per kid spent to hold them in the institutions, and most of them return within 2 years. So that's really like almost an industry with a number of people manipulating it and taking a benefit from any misbehaviour by kids.
And what do you think it is about this current system that's preventing us from challenging that setup?
Well, look, I guess there are quite a few things that prevent us from challenging the way we treat kids, for example, when they break the law. I mean, the first thing is that there's a general feel that the only way you can change people's behaviour is by punishing them, by deterring them. And that's so wrong. It's just even to think that you can change people's behaviour without giving them encouragement and showing them a better way forward when they are so used to those sorts of crimes or those sorts of behaviours around them is ridiculous. So the statistics are clear. Every expert always says that you can't deter crime, and so the idea of punishment from a beginning is wrong. It actually doesn't work. And so some major concepts need to be looked at, and they need to talk in terms of the principles of justice reinvestment instead, where you actually deal with the social problems instead of trying to warehouse them and get them out of the way.
Did it surprise you that the Grafton community blockaded their jail for 5 days to prevent the centre from relocating its inmates to Cessnock and downsizing the centre? What do you think it says about how a community sees a jail?
Well, you've got to laugh. I mean, you really have to. I mean, to have the local community saying we want our jail and blockading the area so that the prisoners cannot be removed. I mean, that is just the opposite of what normally happens when you have a community being told that a prison will be built in the area. What you really have is actually a Grafton community who is so used to the benefits of the money that's being spent inside the prison that it's wanting to draw upon the milk cow of the prison there. They're so used to being dependent upon it. They see almost $100,000 per prisoner in the jail, and they see that as money coming into their community. They don't think in terms of it being a destructive influence there. But the interesting thing, though, is that the people who are currently inside the Grafton jail, they do get the benefit of having local support. So they have, for example, if their family is outside, they have a chance to actually for those people to visit. So to actually move them down into Cessnock, away from their family. Just because they think that you can have a more modern jail in Cessnock rather than in Grafton is wrong. I mean, it's quite clear that it's only fair that if the jail is there and it is serving the local community, if it means that the kids can see their parents who are inside the jail, that has got to be seen as a positive, and we actually supported the jail remaining open. If there is to be a jail, if there are to be people inside prison, it should certainly be there in the local community.
So you mentioned briefly conditions just there, and I'd like to talk more about the conditions for those inside. The South Coast Correctional Centre at Nowra, which opened at the beginning of last year, is the state's newest jail. You toured the site before it was operational, and Justice Action have been quite critical of the $155 million centre being built. What are your concerns about that centre?
Oh, look, it was an outrageous decision to build a jail there. I mean, in the same way as to close down Grafton Jail and then build a new jail in Cessnock. What a ridiculous position to take. I mean, to close down Grafton Jail and then open up a new jail in Nowra. To spend $155 million on a new institution, which means that now we have a major investment in the area where, once again, you have an industry based around Nowra, built upon a failed concept of locking people into cells and leaving them in there for years, is outrageous. The option at the time of the actual prison being built in Nowra was to actually build a TAFE, which was required by the local community. But instead they took a decision to build a jail because, well, they thought it was politically palatable and they thought that they could sell that more easily. Well, there was a local, quite a strong resentment in the area at the time. And it was certainly had been opposed by many locals, but it was built over those protests and is there now, and it's a blight on the community.
So Nowra, like many other jails, is a working jail, and the inmates are meant to learn a trade and for this earn a wage of around $20 a week for that work. How does this function across the state, and what's happening in the Nowra jail?
Look, to talk in terms of working in a jail is just ridiculous. I mean, what you're really doing is you have menial tasks, running machinery that doesn't compete in any sort of way with the outside community. So if you're actually working, right, inside the prison, creating something like, well, if it's not number plates, it's something that is a menial task running. For example, I think they're doing something, there's some fabrication of some sort of some machinery. But those jobs are not in the general community. They're not available in the general community. And so therefore, it means anyone who's working during their period in jail does not gain useful skills, does not get trained for release. When they come out after spending their time in jail, they are in no condition to actually hold down a job, and in no condition to actually take their place in the community and to maintain their families.
And what kind of working week are inmates expected to do?
Look, normally people are locked in their cells till 8:30 in the morning. They normally go back in their cells at about 11:45, stay there till about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and then lock back in their cells about 3:30 in the afternoon. I mean, the amount of time they spend out of their cells is actually as short as they can possibly as the managers can possibly make it, because the longer they stay out of their cells, the more staff they have to have to maintain the operation. So from the point of view of the managers, if they could just leave them in their cells all the time, that would be the cheapest way of managing the jail. So they're constantly one of the key performance indicators of how a prison is going is how long people stay out of their cells. But most times people are in them. For periods of something like 16 hours a day is standard.
And it would be just a short part of that they would be involved in this working program.
Well, that's right. Look, you would probably, I would imagine, get about 4 or 5 hours a day at work at the most, and a lot of that time would also be involved in some sort of maintenance and like any idea of holding down a job, working under those conditions in the general community is just ludicrous.
And has this been in place in New South Wales for a long period?
Oh, look, it's always been the case. In fact, there used to be the old task, which is still the case, where they have all these people employed. In fact, something like 50 or 60% of people were employed in actually cleaning and sweeping yards. So they have inside the jails, they have these large expanses of concrete and of asphalt, and then they give people brooms, and they sweep what's called phantom dirt, right? So you have all these people who are sweepers. So they walk in one side of the yard and sweep the dust on that, and they sweep it to the other side, and they sweep it back up again. So that's the sort of task that is normally allocated to prisoners.
Food is also an issue, and there is no kitchen at the Nowra jail.
Look, food is an extremely important issue. It's one of those opportunities that is in a prison system where you have a chance to actually learn new skills. You have a chance to have your basic foods supplies, fresh vegetables, fresh meat, fresh as you want, and to actually cook in groups. Learning new skills as a community, to learn the skills of sharing and pooling food and budgeting and learning how to cope yourself when you're actually released. Even learning the skills of being a chef, for example. And that was the idea. That was the basis upon which kitchens were put aside in certain jails, like in Lithgow. They actually had a kitchen set, so they were set in areas so people could share the process of cooking. But the reality has become the removal of the kitchens from out of all the jails. Because they found it much easier to manage to actually make these mega kitchens in places like Silverwater, where they end up making airplane food in special what they call cook chill packages, and then they send them all around the state to all the jails, and all they do is just open the door or open the slot in the door and just thrust the plastic package of food that may well have been cooked a week or 2 weeks beforehand, thrust it in, it comes out of a microwave, and there's the food. And that's the form of management that actually occurs here in New South Wales.
See, that for me is actually quite an important issue, is access to fresh food or a facility to be able to prepare your own food.
Look, it's extremely important, and to have taken like a managerial position working against the interests of people gaining skills is an outrage. It actually costs more money, right, to cook it as they do, and of course to transport it and extra microwaves and extra cooking facilities and a mega kitchen out there at Civil Water. It's just such a mistake and such a mischief. But it's one we took on many years ago, and once again the management of corrective services did what it felt like doing.
So what do you mean you took that issue on?
We took the issue to Parliament. We raised the issue several times over quite a long period, and we did this many years ago. And we established also an analysis of what the benefits were for prisoners to cook for themselves. But the management of the jail, the commissioner, didn't listen, and the cook chill arrangements continued.
Is it enough food? Because this does sort of come into an idea of how can a state manage the responsibility of looking after someone's health, and how are they balancing this adequate food with exercise opportunities for even just like that aspect of someone's health?
Well, look, that, it is an issue, and what they have done, they've established what is the basic needs of a young man or woman, as the average person who is in jail is, and so that's what they dispense. But what they do also is they allow people to actually buy their own food additionally. And that's quite a significant supplement that people do buy on their buy-ups. And so if you're working, for example, and you earn, say, $20 a week, then you have a chance to actually buy some supplements which you can cook in your cell by yourself.
July last year saw the start of a mass protest by inmates at California's Pelican Bay prison. In the first 4 days, it built to over 6,500 prisoners on hunger strikes with specific demands. And these demands related to the punitive treatment policies involving group punishment and long-term solitary confinement, as well as about issues relating to food and item entitlements. How significant did you see this action in the States?
Look, it was an immensely significant one. We'd been lobbied, in fact, for support, and we had done so. We made statements of support. I know that some prisoners also in Australia have adopted some solidarity strikes as well during that period and watched it very carefully. It was significant, and it still continues to simmer. I know that more recently there have been statements of further strikes and solidarity actions in support of the Pelican Bay prisoners.
Are the conditions there so different to what's happening in Australia?
No, they're not. In fact, the same idea of long-term solitary confinement exists here in Australia. For example, what they call the HRMU, which is inside Goulburn Jail. There's something like 35 prisoners who are held there, and they're held there without contact with each other. Some people have minor contact, but others have been separated by themselves for years, and all on the basis, once again, of as in California, on the basis of a statement by somebody which is unexaminable, a decision by the commissioner who decides, well, this person, for whatever reason he or she may decide, should be held separately. It's an unexaminable decision which has immense impact on the person's mental health and physical health.
What are the common specifications about item entitlements for prisoners here? What items do you see as quite ordinary that people are unable to have access to?
Well, look, one of the major issues that we've been looking at now for quite a long time, for a decade or so, is the fact that people are so long in their cells and they don't have the opportunity to use that time adequately. And the opportunity to do that in a time of the internet and digital era is to have a computer in their cells where they can actually use their time to develop themselves, to communicate, to get access to legal documents, to access to servers, so they can actually do the educational courses and use their time productively in their cells. Now, this is very much what we'd call a game changer, where instead of people being passive and sitting watching the television, which is always present inside each cell, They have instead an active a computer which is linked to a safe server, as happens in some jails, like as happens, for example, in the ACT. Now, that's what we're looking for, and that's really basic. And the other thing which we think is really absolutely essential and significant is making sure that the community can go into prisons. So there's reclaiming of the prisons as part of the community. Instead of, as it happens now, visitors wait for long periods outside. They're not welcomed in any sort of way at all. And there's constantly a concern that their loved ones inside are vulnerable, sometimes totally isolated and totally depressed, quite often becoming drug dependent because they haven't got the normal services and normal support people around them. So those two issues would make a big difference to prisoners and to the conditions on which how conditions how people are held in prison and upon the way that people would return to the community after release.
As a former prisoner, you were quite active on the issues of prisoner rights while inside, and even won a record title for a four-day stint on Long Bay Jail's rooftop in protest. What was the culture like then, and how did other inmates and correctional service staff view prisoner rights?
Well, look, the term prisoner's rights, I mean, really in some ways, that's a contradiction. To even talk in terms of an assertable right to anything for a prisoner is really a joke. I mean, to think in terms of the people remaining in solitary confinement in the HRMU and not being able to challenge that in the Supreme Court for the actual law that previously had defended their entitlement to be out in the general community to be changed. I mean, they're the sort of things where you must shake your head and say, there aren't human rights that are being protected for people, certainly when they're put in and held inside prisons.
Would you call yourself a prison abolitionist?
Oh, look, I think any person who has examined carefully the way the prison system is working would have to say it doesn't work. It doesn't mean that you're radical to say that prisons don't work and they're a blight in the community. Now, when they actually cause crime, and when they're taking so much money out of the community which should be spent instead in education and health, you've got to say, there's no justification for prisons. There's certainly time to look at what they stand for and to re-examine them, and certainly yes, there's a time to abolish them. That's now.
That's Brett Collins speaking there, coordinator with Justice Action, which is a community organisation which campaigns on prisoners' rights and broader justice issues. Inside Time is a free national newspaper in the UK, which gets circulated to over 80,000 inmates. A large focus of the magazine is on prison reforms, and it's dated back to the renowned 1990 Strangeways riot in Manchester, where two prisoners died and almost 200 were injured. That riot lasted for nearly a month and highlighted poor prison conditions and led to a wave of reforms for prisoners. Inside Time's managing director, Eric McGraw, spoke to Anna Marie Reyes about these reforms. She begins here by asking what the prison system is based on in the UK.
That's a very good question. I'm not sure it's based on anything. I think it's, in fact, there was a debate in the House of Lords recently about the former chief inspector of prisons said he was rather concerned that in a bill going through Parliament at the moment, there was a very big emphasis on punishment. And he had to remind their lordships that the purpose of prison is that you go to prison as punishment, not for punishment. And I think that politicians certainly, and maybe the general public, and certainly the tabloids get mixed up as to what the purpose of prison is for.
So this is what your writers would be then concentrating on when they actually put together pieces for the paper, yeah?
Well, the paper has about 60 pages. About 10 of the pages at the beginning is actually devoted to what we call mailbag, which are all letters coming in from prisoners. And we get responses very often from the government on some of these letters, so which is very helpful. In fact, prison officers very often say we have to read the paper in order to find out what we're supposed to be doing. So that's a very helpful part of the paper.
So it's almost like the Inside Time has now played a role in terms of creating dialogue between lawmakers, between the government, the prison community and the general community.
I think that's a fair thing to say. We, for example, we had recently the Prisons Ombudsman, which was a body that was set up after the Strange Ways riots. He came to us and said, you know, can you do an interview? Because, you know, not many people know what we're doing. It's been around nearly 20 years, but, you know, it's still people don't know what it's there for. So we've been helpful in that kind of way by telling people more about, or prisoners in particular, what particular functions people have.
Okay. Now, just perhaps a quick background on what's the current state of the prison system in the UK, in your view?
Well, the system is that, or what's happening in England and Wales particularly, is the population is growing very fast. And this new coalition government has introduced something called the Rehabilitation Revolution, which is, I think they're rather concerned now that they're putting huge amount of resources into prisons with very little results. So, you know, about maybe more than half of the people who go into prisons are coming out and going back in again. Now, if you had a hospital and you had more people coming out worse than they went in, you'd probably close it. But our prisons, I don't know, it seems that we're quite happy to do that. And a lot of people go to prison these days who don't really need to be there. They're not a threat really to anybody. They need help, and they're not getting that help. They're going into a prison.
You're acting as the editor at the moment of the newspaper.
I'm the managing editor.
The managing editor?
Yes.
The team that actually looks at the monitoring and editorial part and managing the paper, do you hear much from the government sometimes in terms of the content that you handle inside the newspaper?
Yes. It was only last week that we were at the Home Office in London to talk with them about the responses that we get in response to letters. And some of the responses were taking months and months. Some of the responses were actually appalling. There was one lady who wrote to us and said that she had been put on remand in a prison and she was pregnant and couldn't find anyone to, she needs scanning and so on. And when we got the response back, first of all, it was late, so she'd already left the prison. But we also got the response saying, oh, why didn't you just fill out a form or something? Well, that wasn't the right response. So we took it up.
That's Eric McGraw speaking there, the managing director for the Inside Time magazine, which is a national British newspaper focused on prison and justice issues. Speaking there with Anna Marie Reyes. That's all we have time for on The Third Degree. This is 2SER and I'm Jessica Minchell. We'll see you next week.